First, I want to know how you knew it was nothing else. What I had under his shorts was not up for question.
I don't know.
Just shorts and shirts and nothing else. I want to know how Wim knows this.
Well.
Steve Clark does the hokey-cokey with the Fulham job, Reading grind their way to a 2-1 win over Bolton. They saw about as much enthusiasm from the Maliski Stadium crowd as Alan West being told he's won VIP tickets to a Michelle McManus gig. We look at how the short and long-term future of the club has been impacted by events on and off the pitch in the past week, and much, much more on the 75th edition of the Tireless End podcast. Hello and welcome. Thank you very much for taking the time to download and listen to us this week. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of the Tireless End. .com and host of this merry show. And I'm joined this week by the aforementioned man who gets excited by Michelle McManus gig.
Just Michelle McManus full stop, let alone the gig.
Absolutely.
That's a lot to get excited about.
I'm just thinking now, it's probably an old reference now. Do people even remember who she is?
I'm not sure they do.
It was such an old... She won one of the pop idols.
She did.
It was what was on TV before the X Factor Kids.
Did she win it? Did she actually win it?
She won it, yeah.
Did she win it?
Wow. Series 2, yeah.
Big prize.
Google her. And the other man you've just heard is Mr. Handbags Harris. Dave, hello.
Back pain and all, good evening.
Hello. Is that Clark-inspired back pain?
Probably more to do with Danny Williams. But, yeah, there we go.
Well,
we'll hear about that later.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing about that later. Right. There is only one show in town, or certainly over the past week anyway. That is Mr. Steve Clark. We're going to mix things up this week. We're going to start with our pub chat, looking at the situation as it unfolded over the week and our thoughts, and then we will move on to recapping Bolton. So here's pub chat.
The Tilehurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
So when we went on our little international break-related hiatus, I didn't expect very much to happen when we came back to this podcast. I thought we'd probably talk about a fairly scruffy win over Bolton, and that bit came true. What I didn't expect to be talking about was our manager very nearly moving 40-odd miles down the M4 to join one of our championship rivals. If you have been living under a rock or in some far-flung corner of the globe without internet in the past week, welcome back. The story that you've missed is, as I said, that Reading manager Steve Clark was linked with a move to Fulham. That link proved more than just speculation as the week unfolded. Turns out he was given permission and talked to the Cottagers, decided though, at the last minute, not to take up the offer and to remain as Reading manager. Now, before I get your opinions on the issue, this is what Clark had to say about the decision. He said, "I'm a professional. I went and had a good conversation with Fulham and decided that what I had here was better for me at this stage. It wasn't about money. It was about professionalism and ambition. I didn't want to be in a situation where I was always thinking, what if I'd gone there, spoken to them, and they'd come up with something that was mind-blowing. But that wasn't the case. What I've got here is probably more mind-blowing. I'm very happy with what I've got here. When I sat down and weighed at the best options, this was the best option by a mile." So guys, that's Clark's official word on the whole saga. Obviously, I sat down with Johnny, Becker and Sim in a hotel room in Manchester, and we gave our thoughts as this situation is unfolding on Thursday night. Since then, obviously, we know what's happened. What are your overall thoughts now that the dust's had time to settle?
I'm really, really struggling to muster up anything more than just meh about it, to be honest with you. It's many, many people seem to be annoyed, really annoyed by it. But me, this isn't, it's in many, many ways, it's nothing like Pardew, it's nothing like McGee. And I really, really struggle to see what people's problems are. Fact of the matter is, you know, all right, fine, you know, he's given the club a complete reshuffle in the summer, as he sees fit. But, you know, if a club comes and says, we want to talk to you, and the club that you're currently at says, crack on, you're not going to turn it down, are you? You know, you're at least going to, you know, a club, potentially, let's face it, Fulham could easily have blown Reading out of the water in terms of wages, in terms of transfer fees. They've got parachute payments at the moment. They're quite ready to spend over £10 million on a player, as they've proven with Ross McCormack. And so it's perfectly conceivable that Steve Clark, on the face of it, might have seen Fulham as a very
appealing
prospect, and maybe not much more, but certainly more likely to potentially get promoted than Reading.
Westy, do you have any sympathy with those that say, well, look, he's started this job here, he's spent a lot of the owner's money, he's cleared out the backroom staff and laid down all the foundations. And there were some fans angry at that. Do you sympathise those at all?
Yeah, I do a little bit. What made me laugh about this, one of the analogies where people have said it was like he's cheating on his wife, which I thought was hilarious. You can just imagine Nigel Hale picking up his phone and seeing text messages from Fulham asking him to come and secretly visit him and when you're going to leave your wife, basically. I thought that was brilliant. But yeah, I think you can have a lot of sympathy for them. He has had every opportunity to make it his club. I mean, he's cleared out the backroom staff. He's brought in his own players now. I think Reading have given him the tools to get the team promoted, probably more than anyone else will. On the flip side, when I listened to his interview and he said, look, I'm a professional, I want to do well in my career and I was just looking at the options that I had. I think anyone, I mean, other than football, that seems to be a business all of his own, I think anyone in this room, given the opportunity to better themselves in a different job or at least have a look, see if you've got a better opportunity somewhere else, you'd go and do it. I think personally, he's had a look, he's thought that he's better at Reading. The only thing I will say is it's a fickle game, and if they'd have lost on Saturday, some Reading fans have been calling for his head. So you've still got to keep your options open. Will it have a negative effect on the squad? Maybe. It certainly didn't help against Bolton because I thought they were poor.
Well, this is the big question now, Dave. Now that it does appear that he's staying, subject to any sort of ridiculous shenanigans over the next few days and weeks, looks like he's going to be here, at least for the short term anyway. Do you think this has done damage to either the squad or his race? Any damage really with any relationship he's got?
Do you know what? I don't think it has. I mean, where the squad's concerned, if say I don't know, I'm trying to think of one of our permanent players. We haven't got many of them.
No,
we've
not.
If someone say Paul McShane, for example, if a Premier League club or a top end Championship club comes in January, offers a mind blowing amount of money, you know, he's going to look at that and think, you know, yeah, all right, fine, let's do it. Invariably, if clubs come in, players move. So players know it's going to happen. Players know that that managers move on. They just have to deal with it. With the fans, there's a lot of damage done, clearly. Fans don't trust him now. Personally, I've never trusted him. Has to be said. Go on record, never trusted him because he's struck me as exactly what he said. He's always struck me as one of these managers who is a professional, who will happily...
100% agree.
Yeah, he'll happily just, you know, drop the club that he's at the drop of a hat.
It's a stepping stone for him, let's be honest.
Exactly,
it is. It's his chance to get back onto a bigger stage. He's worked at massive clubs. He's worked at Chelsea, yeah. Liverpool. You know, he's worked at these type of clubs. Let's be brutally honest. Reading aren't at that level and are unlikely to ever be at that level.
But not only that, he's been sacked before and he knows the game. We all know it. It's football. Again, like I said earlier, if they'd been beaten at Bolton, some players, some sections of the fans have been calling for his head anyway.
Exactly.
And he's not set the world alight here. And I don't think anyone, well, maybe some people, but generally me and probably you, have bags, was if he would have gone on Thursday, Friday, I wouldn't have been too bothered.
I wouldn't have been bothered either because I think the club have form already. With when they sacked Nigel Atkins, they had Clark lined up the next day. And I think they will have been actively preparing for Steve Clark to leave. But, you know, going back to Clark and the damage and the whole loyalty thing, Steve Clark is very aware, obviously, as you've just alluded to, he was sacked at West Brom, having done a reasonably good job, all told. Steve Clark knows all too well that loyalty doesn't really count for much in football these days.
There is none.
Because if he goes on a losing streak of 4 or 5 games, you know, or 10 games without a win, the likelihood is the club ain't going to show a lot of loyalty to him.
I mean, 5 games without a win and a defeat against Bolton, which quite easily could have happened, people would have been calling for his head. So he's probably right to look around for another club because he's not set the world alight.
Well, he had a win rate exactly the same as Nigel Atkins going into the Bolton game. So not exactly the strongest position. My only concern is this, and I've voiced these sort of concerns on the show, but I'll quickly repeat it now, is it's twofold for me. One is that I'm not sure the owners are going to fully trust him with the money anymore. And two, I worry about player recruitment in general because... the scenario I can see now is Clark sees a player he likes, quite expensive. Maybe the board don't share his same view. Now, before, might have been prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt if it was, say, 50-50. So, okay, he's the manager, whatever. Now, he comes up and says, I want this player. They're like, oh, do I really want to spend 5-6 million on, you know, not saying I'm really going to spend that sort of money. I'm not going to spend, £3 million on this player because, you know, you might not be here in a few weeks' time and a new manager might not fancy him. And likewise, when he's trying to sign a player... and he's trying to sell him on a project, saying, I really like you as a player. If that player's maybe had a bit of a bad experience at a club before when a manager's bought him and then quickly moved on, is he going to be so tempted? Just look what's happened to Simon Cox.
Yeah, there is a certain amount of doubt in the air now, isn't there? And I was, like you're saying, there's not a lot of them players at the club at the moment that are actually ours. So they're in the shop window. They're in it for himself to a certain extent. Seems like Clark's in it for himself, and that's a worrying trend that might run through the whole squad. Again, Blackman's run out of contract. You can hardly ask him for loyalty when your manager's looking to jump ship.
Final question then, before we move on to the impact of that, and obviously the Bolton game on Saturday. How long do you think Clark will be at Reading now? I'll ask this first. Do you think he'll see out the season, first of all? Yes or no?
It depends on results.
But... if you're putting a bet on, gamble away.
Yeah, I'd say yes.
You say yes, he's going to see out the season. Yeah. Dave?
No.
No? Okay, I think he'll see out the season and that's it. I cannot see him being here after the end of this season.
No, it doesn't. Certainly doesn't look good, does it?
I think...
all it's going to take is a couple of defeats on the trot and the home atmosphere will be quite toxic.
Yeah.
Yeah, not that it was exactly brilliant on Saturday, which we'll get onto in a minute. Just before then, we do move on. I did quickly ask people on Twitter just before we went on air whether to back Clark or sack him. I was actually surprised at how this poll is going at the moment. I said, as we record, there's been 218 votes. 57% say back him, 43% sack him. Very nearly 50-50.
Yeah, it's a timing thing though, isn't it? Not only has he looked at another job, we've also had a lot of bad results recently, or certainly not wins. And we've got a sporty win against Bolton. And at that point, you're asking people to vote, they're going to say no. If you'd have done it a month ago when we was winning and then Fulham come in for him, I think that...
Oh no, it's got everything to do with the Fulham thing.
Yeah, timing, isn't it?
But I'm quite surprised at how many people are still saying sack him.
Yeah,
I thought it would have gone down by quite a bit.
Again, I don't think we've got no sort of loyalty to Steve Clark because he hasn't done anything since he's been here.
He's not a Reading man. He's been here less than a year. He's not earned the loyalty yet. But I mean, if anything, that you know, even though the poll is what 200 odd people, what it does show is that, you know, if you get a split decision like that, it's been a complete PR cock up from all concerned. You know, and do you know what? I wouldn't even trust necessarily what Steve Clark has said in the media. You've got to take what a manager says with a pinch of salt. And I understand that there's a chap who is apparently an insider who suggests that the only reason why the deal didn't come out or go through with Clark and Fulham was that Steve Clark's agent wanted to renegotiate the bonuses.
Yeah, and you can read that story up on tarsen.com. I said lots of different stories coming out. And it's funny because people were saying immediately in the comments section to that piece, obviously we post it very much as rumour rather than fact, people saying, oh, well, no, he's come out and said this. And my response was simple. As if he's ever going to come out and say,
of course
I broke down because they didn't give me enough money.
Yeah, of course
it's managerial suicide if you say that.
Of course, but then at the same time, you know, Fulham, apparently Nigel Pearson, their negotiations with Pearson, they broke down. They've broken down with Steve Clark. And so it could just simply be a bit of PR stuff on Fulham's part. The fact of the matter is, you simply don't know.
No,
it's such a shady business, football. You simply don't know.
Well, indeed. Well, let's get back to business on the pitch and let's recap that win over Bolton.
View from the Tarhurst end. Recapping this week's Championship action.
Okay, so after all that off-the-pitch drama, it was back to the Medeski, a freezing cold Medeski. Winter is well and truly upon us, gents. Almost out of it. I swear the last game that I saw, and I missed a couple, so I think my last home game was actually Charlton. I swear I was in short sleeves going to that game. This one, I've got about five layers on. I can't feel my toes. Worth it in the end, though. 2-1 win over Bolton. Nobody's going to say this was a classic. Nobody's even going to accuse this or suggest it was a great Reading performance. But they got the job done, Westy. As I said, 2-1 win. Was probably a bit more nervous than we needed it to be in the final 15. But once we did take the lead, it was still pretty good.
Well, I thought they had the goalkeeper to thank for even getting anywhere near winning this game because they could have quite easily been 3-down in the first 20 minutes. I thought he was fantastic on the day. El Habsi had a brilliant game.
Curse of the X working in our favour for once.
Yeah, it was just good, wasn't it? I thought, really, if Bolton would have come away with a win from that game, I don't think we could have said we deserve to win it because, all right, we scored when we had opportunities, but Reading weren't good all through the 90 minutes, I don't think. Maybe 20 minutes spell there was all right, but it was comfortable, but it was only comfortable because the goalkeeper kept him in the early doors.
20 minutes after we scored the first goal, we were absolutely fine. Bolton offered absolutely nothing. The stuffing had been knocked out of them and half-time couldn't come soon enough for them. Otherwise, it could easily have ended up being an absolute rout.
We could have been well down before then.
But we could have been, yeah. Bolton, three glorious opportunities to score. Funnily enough, each time with the headers, I actually called for Al Apsi to actually come out and claim the ball. And having seen the replays, it shows you the angle that I had, because he was actually, you know, the ball was never there to be claimed by the keeper. He's done exactly the right thing and staying rooted to his line.
Yeah, I was amazed at how easily our defence was cut apart by such a weak team. And just before we go into it, I mean, changes at the back. Clark said he wanted to go with the defence that played so well against Brighton. So that meant Hector was in alongside a returning McShane. No Anton Ferdinand in the 18. Clark saying it wasn't injury. It was just simply because he wasn't going to start him. And he felt that Cooper, at his age, is a bit better at coming off the bench. So Ferdinand, at this moment, you know, Andrew Ferdinand could well be injured now.
Yeah, probably is now, yeah.
In the last 5 minutes, injury could have struck.
Anything could have happened.
But he was just completely left out. Andrew Taylor at the left back as well, keeps his place over Jordan Obita as well. And Matt Williams, you know, makes the point, given the recent Taylor-Obita rotation, what's your first choice back four? Did he get it right? Was that the right back four to play?
With Hector's form at the moment, no, you've got to say it's not. He's got to have Ferdinand in there. Ferdinand and McShane at the start of the season were absolute rock. Admittedly, they had the likes of Tish Bowler in front of them. A certainly much more balanced midfield with Stephen Quinn as well, which obviously helps. But at the moment, I just think with Ferdinand and his know-how, you've got to have him in there.
Yeah, I thought Hector, he does have this habit of just knocking a ball a little bit too far away from himself or slipping over.
It's concentration for me.
Inopportune time, doesn't it?
It's all concentration. I just think there's something, and that this will come with experience, but there's just something that it's just lapses, and we've seen it throughout his career. Both through Reading and when he's played for Jamaica.
He's got these errors in him. Yeah, a little bit casual now again.
So unfortunately not. Other changes, well, Matej Vidra not fit to start. He did play a minute off the bench at the end. Gave Nick Blackman the chance to go through the middle alongside Lando Saar. Gareth McCleary wide out on the right. Dave, you picked up on this early doors. What did you make of that?
Didn't really work, did it? Didn't really look as though we were going to cut them open, certainly in the first 25 minutes or so. To be perfectly honest with you, it was much of a muchness. I think Saar has got to have... Saar works much, much better with, you've got to say, Matej Vidra. The two have... They struck up a bit of an understanding. And let's face it, if Vidra starts on Saturday, I think that there's a potential that Bolton's very, very flimsy and frail back line could have easily been cut open. You look at with the ease, particularly the second goal, you look at the ease in which that, you know, Danny Williams found massive, massive acres of space in between defence and midfield. You've got to say that Vidra would have had an absolute field day, I think.
Gareth McCleary not had the best of starts of the season. We wrote a piece during the international break on him, Bucks Royal, looking at how he's been a bit of a peripheral figure at the moment. Came back, got this start on Saturday. I thought Wesley was probably the best game we've seen from him so far.
Yeah,
this season.
Is exactly what I said, actually, to make people sat around me, because I thought McCleary has been poor all season. I don't think he's had a decent game. And I thought, in general, I mean, he started a bit slow, but as the game went on, he got better and better. And I thought it probably was his best performance of the season. As for Blackman, again, at the end of the game, especially, I thought he took the wrong man off, because I don't think Saar offered a great deal during the match. Every time the ball came, he seemed to end up on the floor again. He does have a few nice touches, but he didn't look like an outlet for Reading. And I thought it was a bit weird to take Blackman off at the end when he was causing them a little bit of a problem with his pace and running at people. So that was a strange one. But again, Blackman didn't have a great game, no, but he was a bit of an outlet.
The man on the other wing to McCleary, Dave, Lucas Pearson. A man who was very much getting my ire up. I couldn't just... Every week, it's funny, he does nothing. Then he gets a goal.
Yeah, I say he's one of those annoying players that does absolutely nothing and then put in a great cross or score a goal.
I text every game that I go to, I text my brother and my dad. And I text them in response to that goal. If there was one player that you didn't want to score, it was Lucas Pearson, because you know it's almost nailed on that he's going to start the next game.
Yeah, I thought he was shocking again.
I think he was dreadful.
Credit to him for the goal. I said he did charge down the defender. I was having a debate on Twitter with someone about whether this was Pearson's hard work or a defender cocker. My opinion is the defender's control was awful and he picked the wrong direction to try and clear it.
He took it well, to be fair to him.
The guy Prince was, as I think I said it during the first half, he reminded me of Sonko in 2004-05. The Sonko is not the Sonko of 5-6, which was just an absolute rock. The Sonko that would belt the ball in his own face in a 3-0 defeat up at Preston. Piers on, he's just done basically the basic thing that you expect a player to do in that position. He's put a player under pressure, and the pressure has made that particular player buckle. Lovely finish, don't get me wrong. Really, really good finish. Lovely little dink over the keeper. But to be honest with you, I mean, midfield, yeah, exactly that.
He's had a much easier chance a few minutes later. He's got a header from about 3 yards.
That was a shocking miss.
There's not really a lot that he offers to the team. You know, if you stick him in midfield, then he's going to, apart from the nice little flowery touch here and there, he's not going to hold the ball up. He's not going to thread a through ball. He's, you know, and defensively, what's he going to do defensively? You know, he's just, it'd be absolutely suited to a Spanish game.
Yeah.
But for, you know, an English game, second division or whatever you want to call it, Championship, League One, whatever, it's just no.
Looks too rough and ready for him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
One man nicely getting on the score sheet, though. Danny Williams, cracking strike. Although, had he missed this, there would have been a fair few questions asked because there was a very easy pass for him to play through.
I think Blackman's reaction told a story, didn't it? Even when Williams scored. You watch it on the highlights, and I saw it at the time. He's not happy that he hasn't received the ball.
No, caught the arm, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, credit to him. I said he scored it, so it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, no.
Great strike, as you know, he very rarely does a simple goal, just Danny Williams.
I thought he was very good as well, Williams, on the day. I thought he drove the team on when we were struggling a little bit. I thought he was one of the better outfield players.
Yeah,
he very much grew into the game.
And that goal is pretty much the sole reason that my back is the way it is at the moment.
Over-celebrated,
yeah. I've done that before,
You didn't
actually.
Have money on it by any chance, did you?
No. I've done that before, actually, as well, with Matthew Montes' equaliser against Millwall on the opening day of the season.
2-2.
I did my neck in that day.
Fair enough. The game, at that point, I really wanted Reading to go on and just get another couple of goals and really be comfortable. But this is Reading.
That didn't happen, did it, mate?
They very rarely do it. Into the second half, you know, Bolton strike the woodwork. And then get an even better chance to get back in the game. Oliver Norwood concedes a pretty soft penalty, really. I don't think there was even many people appealing for it.
I don't even think it was. I don't even think it was.
Marginal.
Yeah, the camera angle was not good on it. And during the actual match, I didn't even see what had happened. But when you look at it, okay, you've dived in. That's trouble, really.
Anyway.
He's actually diving, trying to get out of it. He's trying to move his way out of it. And the player's he's just thrown himself to the floor. The referee's bought it. The problem is that there's no appeal, really, from Norwood. So in that respect, you could turn around and say, yeah, penalty. But I wouldn't trust a player's reaction.
There was no appeal from anyone, was
there?
No. Feeney put it away to bring it back in. But what riled up the fans, and you touched on one of his subs earlier, was not 2 minutes before this penalty was awarded, he'd brought on another defender. He'd brought on Jake Cooper.
That's the first phase of play, after the Jake Cooper one.
And so the defence, maybe not as organised as they should be. Do you want to see him bring on another centre-back at that stage?
No, absolutely not.
There didn't seem a lot of need, to be honest, did there?
There wasn't, no. I mean, he's given the excuse that he wanted to go man-for-man with the three big men at the top. All right, fair enough, but how often do you see an attacker go off the pitch and another central defender get brought on and suddenly, bang, it's just one-way traffic all the time? Because what that did, who was it? He came on for
McCleary.
Yeah.
Which immediately, you know, you're going up to a front two, minimum of a front two. He's gone to a midfield three. He's already got a beater. He's got Williams and who was the other one in the middle?
Norwood.
You've got no width. So you're immediately putting your fullback under a significant amount of pressure. And if you watch the goal, from the goal kick, you've got a beater who's going to challenge the ball. Jake Cooper gets drawn forward with Maydean. He's clearly man-marking Maydean. A beater gets drawn across into a position where you would naturally have a wide player. And then, you know, a beater is not going to win the header because he ends up going up against somebody who's bigger and better than him. Where Jake Cooper's been drawn out of position, Maydean's then gone into the back. The ball's just simple sort of play out into the wide area, and the ball's come in and immediately under pressure. So if you don't have that wide player, the wide midfielder, that's going to happen.
Yeah. Six defenders on the pitch by the end of the game as well.
The thing is, when you put defenders on the pitch like that, especially when it's still 2-0 against the bottom of the league side at home, right? Immediately, it makes everyone think defence-minded. Backs to the wall. Let's stand on the line. And there was no need to do it at that stage. And what he ended up doing was taking off his only outlets in McClear and Blackman. So it basically said to the team, we're just going to sit in for the rest of the match.
Really wanted to see someone like Rowan Libbard get a game in front of his home fans. I said, if you're going to take
Sarr off, put him on.
Go and try and win the game in style. But, you know, Clark came out after the game and said it was one of those games we just couldn't lose. The players were nervous because they knew they had to win it. If that makes sense.
To be fair, in the end, all right, Bolton had a significant amount of pressure after the goal. They didn't create any chances at all.
No.
They had a lot of pressure, though, and it just invited it.
They did have a free kick that was in a very similar position to that one Everton scored, though.
Yeah, it was a good position.
And I was thinking, don't buckle here, no. Ali. You've had a great game. But no, they did hold on. They picked up the points. They've also made up ground on the teams around. They've moved up to seventh.
Yeah, in a cold light of day, we won the match, so we can't really complain, but it was far from convincing, let's put it that way.
Indeed. And just before we go and move on to news bites and the atmosphere as well, because this was one of the other questions, what sort of reception would Steve Clarke get? I don't know if you can even judge it. I just think fans would... The whole place was dead.
Don't forget, people had gloves on, so you can't even clap him.
No. there was one muffled Steve Clarke's Barmy Army that, again...
Yeah, it was a bit muted, wasn't it?
Yeah, again, like the reception of Michelle McManus at a gig.
Yeah.
Decidedly lukewarm, but which is warmer than the temperature in the stadium.
Sure, it was.
But Dave, what did you get the feeling around you? Did you get any sort of sense of hostility?
Not hostilities so much. No, I think after the first 20-25 minutes, the fans were starting to turn, knowing that it was, you know, to be fairly honest, it was almost inevitable that we were going to start like that, wasn't it? You know, let's face it, a load of upheaval in the middle of the week. And suddenly, you know, you ain't going to end up with a performance like that. I mean, the lucky goal that we got was absolutely brilliantly timed in many ways, because if that hadn't arrived, then you can only see at 0-0 the Bolton getting stronger and stronger ultimately going on to win the game. And if that had happened against the worst team in the division at the moment, then, it would have got...
I can honestly say, if that had gone in at 0-0 with the chances of Bolton had to be take the lead, I think they'd have been booed off at half time.
Oh, well, yeah.
So it was lucky that goal came when it came.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, as I said, 3 points. We move on to Forest, which we'll cover a little bit later on. But in the meantime, there's a few chunks in the old News Bites bag.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, Jones, just a few bits of news to cover then, starting with a man who was in the heart of the defence. And on the rumour front, one of Reading's man linked to the Thai group said that apparently Chelsea wanted Michael Hector back in January, but the club are confident of hanging on to him because there was a gentleman's agreement that he would stay till the season. So,
gentleman's agreements in football, I can see that working.
Regardless of how strong this rumour is, if you were in charge and you had the choice, would you be happy to let him go back to Chelsea in order to get someone else in?
I don't know if they need someone else in. I think Cooper could do a job. I think he's a good player. So I won't be too concerned. It's the only worry you got is Ferdinand's fitness, which is a little bit ropey.
Just a bit. Mm. Dave, sad to see him go.
Do you know what? While you were actually reading out that question, it was just a case of raised eyebrows and knowing you smile, because let's face it, gentleman's agreement, what's it bloody worth?
Yeah.
You know, it's worth about as much as a flipping contract.
Yeah. You can understand why Chelsea want him back, though, because they ain't going nowhere this season, so it'd be a good opportunity to look at a few of the younger players.
Yeah, absolutely. But would I be, do you know what? No, not really. He's not our player anymore.
No. And this is just it. The closer it gets...
He's not playing well.
The closer it gets to summer, the more you're just thinking, see you later.
Yeah. And of course, if Chelsea did say, yeah, we want him back, then it takes that question out of the equation for Steve Clarke. Does he play Ferdinand or does he play Hector?
Yeah, and it frees up a loan spot. Obviously, Hector now does count as a loanee because that's what he is, and that's why you have to leave one out of the six out of the squad every week.
Yep.
I suppose with Hector, it's a bit like we were saying earlier. Well, I was saying earlier, it's a bit of a sort of messy divorce, isn't it? He's still living at home. Things are not going well, and you know he's going to leave at the end of the season.
He's still looking for a new place.
Yes, sort of.
If Chelsea wanted back, just
let him have him.
Let him have him.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on, someone who has left the club on loan, Jack Stacey, the young winger, has joined Barnet today. He'll be there until the end of Boxing Day at the very least.
That'll be a very interesting education for him under Martin Allen.
Indeed, Mad Dog is manager. Barnet have taken a few of our younger players on loan over the past few years. They've had Jordan Abita and Michael Hector, didn't do them any harm. League 2, good training ground for him.
Yeah, of course it is. It's not doing Craig Tanner any harm, is it?
No, he's doing well at Plymouth.
Yep.
That's right. If you can do it there, you get to the rough and tumble of things, and then Championship should be a little bit easier for him when you come back.
Yeah, Dominic Samuel scored on his debut for Gillingham a couple of weeks ago. Tariq Fosu got his first goal for Fleetwood as well. So these younger players that were in and around the first team sort of this time last season now gradually being allowed to leave and get experience, and that can only be a good thing because, as we mentioned, we've got a lot of players on loan at the moment, and at the moment, even though he's our player, I can't see Hurtado doing very much beyond the summer. Ola John's obviously on loan, and again, isn't exactly pulling up trees to the sign where you think, got to sign him.
Yeah, no.
Robson Canoe's out of contract. So there are going to be spots opening up for players like Stacey and Fosu.
You know what? They're all highly rated as well. They're all very highly rated within the academy. So if they can do it at a League 2 level, then there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to make a step up.
Well, all of them have seen flashes of it at Championship level. I mean, certainly Fosu, we saw in those 60 minutes against Derby.
Yeah.
I mean, he could do.
Arguably, you get a game against Derby, you'd be hard-pushed to say that he's not better than some of the players we've got here now.
Very true. It's very
Pearson.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly better than him.
Unfortunately, we can't send Pearson out on loan, though, can we?
No, send him back, can't we? Maybe we should pretend he's Hector and just send him back anyway.
It's a 2-for-1 deal. Yeah. We move out with a box of stuff.
Yeah, no, that gentleman's agreement. We'll send you one back, but it won't be Hector.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can send him off to Canada instead.
Yeah, so best luck to Jack. I said we'll run our monthly loan report, so we'll keep you up to date with how he's getting on there. The next one will be coming in the next week or two on the Tarlist End. Meanwhile, we had a couple of trialists at the club last time we spoke. One of those was Kevin Foley, former Wolves fullback. He's been allowed to leave the club, obviously not doing enough to impress Steve Clark. Well, one man who has managed to keep his place, certainly on trial at least, is Dylan Powers, Colorado Rapids midfielder, played alongside Kevin Doyle past few months. He's had his trial extend at the club, so it looks like they're quite keen on him.
Any relation to Austin?
Don't know.
Max. It's a shame he's not from Austin, Texas, isn't it? That'd be brilliant.
Dylan Powers from Austin.
Again, he's obviously shown enough to give him another week, but they tend to do this for players that are from abroad anyway, so I don't think they end up signing him, but just have a look.
And again, if you go onto the front page, should still be just down towards the bottom now. We did have an opinion piece from a Colorado fan who's been watching him. So if you want to find out what type of player he is, I recommend you go and read that. And that just about wraps up the News Bites this week. One other bit of news, but I'll get to that in any other business because it's site news rather than anything else. But in the meantime, it's time to move on to that all-important mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter.
At The Tarlhurst End.
And facebook.com/ The Tarlhurst End.
Right, a big thank you to all of you who've got in touch this week via Twitter at The Tarlhurst End, to facebook.com/ The Tarlhurst End, or to the email inbox at thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. Try and read out as many as we can, but if you do use that hashtag TTE podcast, you've got a much bigger chance.
Very important, we just found out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Handbags, that you use the hashtag.
Absolutely.
Off air.
Yep.
Indeed. So use that hashtag.
Leave it there.
So I can pick up the tweet much easier. Anyway, let's start with Matt Castle. He says, if Clark keeps his job beyond the end of the season, I'd be amazed. Throwing on a third centre-back to deal with a lightning pace of Heskey is just plain stupid. They had come to attack us being two goals down, so instead of setting up a counter-attack team, he completely nullified our attack and let them attack with freedom. I've been impressed with the substitutions throughout most of the season, which begs the question, do you think Clark is letting the pressure affect him too much? Also, can we put the whole Fulham fiasco down to inexperience as a manager?
I don't think we can do that, no.
No, absolutely. Wait. Absolutely not. He's not exactly inexperienced in the world of football, is he?
He's nearly 60, isn't he?
The thing is, he was ultimately what he's been, if you want to believe everything that he said, is absolutely brutally honest in his dealings with the press, supposedly. We've had questions on that today, as I alluded to earlier. But I can't do anything but agree with that. I really can't do anything but agree with. But agree.
You think the pressure's getting to him?
I think pretty much. I think you take a look at the. You know, if there's anything that he's being naive about, it was throwing on a third centre back. We know what that's going to do. I mean, you can understand it. Brendan Rodgers did it up at Preston in 2009 when we were 2-0 up against them. Brought on a third centre back because they brought on a third centre forward in John Parkin, and bang, you know, all it was the Alamo. Then they hit the bar 3 times. But Steve Clark, having worked under some of the greatest coaches and managers that the game's got?
At home against the bottom team, having won one game all season.
Seriously?
Yeah, I thought it was ridiculous.
Yeah. Am I letting the pressure? I think the pressure's getting to it. No, because he's a professional. But having said that, he knows full well that it's results based. So he's been trying to get. He's tried to get the result as what he thinks is best. But it's let's face it, it's a bloody stupid decision.
Daniel McKay says Clark has to go. Being one of his biggest backers, the lack of loyalty after everything he's been given is wrong. And there are quite a few strong opinions as well. In response to our poll, I can't literally loads. This poll sparked a load. They haven't used the hashtag, so that's why I'm not reading them out.
The problem you've got, I mean, as I said earlier, again,
is people not using the hashtag. You're damn right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very important.
Loyalty. The word loyalty in football gets bandied around left, right, and centre. For fans, it means so much. But until fans begin to realise that this isn't the 1960s, 70s, or 80s anymore, football changed in 1992. Football changed. And loyalty now is to the pound.
Yep.
And it's since the mid to late 90s when that really started to take effect. You got the Bosman ruling as well in the late 80s, early 90s, whenever that was. Football's changed. Loyalty doesn't exist anymore.
We ran a piece on it just a couple of weeks ago. Clark is now the 12th longest serving manager in the Championship. And he's still not finished a year.
No, it's ridiculous. There is no loyalty in football. There's no loyalty from the players. There's no sense of... I know you have a certain amount of homegrown players at Reading at the moment, but if you look at the rest of the team, what affiliation have they got with your club? None. So why would they be loyal to it? All they're loyal to is money and furthering their career.
Exactly.
And that's I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing, but it's not like it used to be.
Hey, let's not hide up. Even fans. Look at the attendances at Medeski at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't loyal, unwavering backing from the fans. You know, those supporters that were happy to turn up and pay their money to watch Premier League football when they were doing well at the top of the league. Weren't there on Saturday?
Do you know what used to make me laugh? There's very few players nowadays that play for the same club throughout their career, or at least 10 years.
Exactly.
But the only ones that are, or do, were players like Steven Gerrard and Lampard, right? But they're being paid multi-million pound contracts. It's not as if they're on sort of £200, £300 a week.
Yeah.
I mean, they're loyal to the fact that they're getting 60, 70, 80 grand a week. Yeah. They're not loyal to the clubs.
The days of one club players are pretty
dead and
much
gone.
And you know who's next in line for a testimonial at Reading by the numbers?
I don't
know who it is.
No.
Dave?
We're talking the longest serving player at the moment.
Yeah.
Jordan Avila?
Hal Robson-Kanu.
Of course it is. Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it?
Can you imagine the Hal Robson-Kanu testimonial game?
I don't think
amazing
it would
scenes.
Have one, to be honest.
Yeah. Anyway, that's one to look at in the podcast. Made his debut 2009. So, League Cup before that.
Let's say it's a whole other debate.
More than halfway there, then, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a whole other debate because you don't get players that stay at clubs for 10 years no more. It doesn't happen.
No. Right. Dave has got a question about Saturday. He says, as my phone dies on me, he says, question for the podcast. Saturday, we created nothing, both goals from individuals. Do you think it's the tactics or the players?
I think that's incorrect. I thought the first goal was a decent team move. We picked up the ball on a Bolton counter and we quickly moved it forward through Hector to Norwood to Williams in space.
The second goal, you mean?
Second goal, yeah. Sorry, the second goal. First goal, yeah, all right.
I was going to say, the first goal wasn't much of a team move unless you count the Bolton team.
Yeah. the second goal. But yeah, we didn't create a lot, did we?
I don't think we have for weeks, though, have we, to be fair? And what made me laugh, someone who sat next to me said to me, what happened to the team that was here 3 months ago? Because they were a shadow of what they were.
Well, half of them were injured.
Yeah, but they were a shadow, weren't they? That little pass and move, that little intricate play.
Because half of them are injured.
Doesn't happen, yeah.
I've said this every week since he's gone down injured. Stephen Quinn, massive.
Because the ball's going through Lucas Piers on, he's trying to do the little pass and move, and it's just not coming off.
No.
Yeah, it's going literally through Lucas Piers.
Coming off his shin.
Yeah, through his legs.
Reminds me of Paul Brooker in many ways.
Oh, there's a comparison you don't want.
I feel sorry for Paul Brooker.
Paul Brooker had a song
is it not suitable for a family friendly show?
Can you give us a nicer version of it?
It ends with "Here comes the ball, there goes the ball."
Yeah, yeah.
To the tune of Robin Hood.
Robin Hood,
right? Riding through the glen.
Paul Brooker once attracted a seven-figure transfer fee.
Wow.
To Leicester. Yeah. Was it Brighton to Leicester?
It's Brighton or Brentford. Or did he went to Brentford after us?
Brentford after us, yeah. Yeah, he was given a 2-year contract and was let go after one season on a free because Steve Coppell suddenly realised that was actually the right thing to do.
I think this was the same Leicester era where they were paying seven-figure fees for Trevor Benjamin
yeah.
and Adi Akinbaye.
Yeah.
So, Good one. And so they're top of the Premier League now, so yeah. Who's had the last laugh? It was part of the master plan.
It was a long-term plan they had.
Indeed, indeed. Right. Tim Redmayne, a worry that Blackman didn't seem bothered about celebrating the second goal after not being squared. I think we covered that. I just think he was a bit annoyed he didn't get the ball.
Yeah, he wants to score.
Yeah.
He's desperate to score again. He hasn't scored for, what, 5 games now since Rotherham?
Yeah.
He's desperate to score again. That's basically all it is. I don't read anything into that.
Gary Woodward, not starting the games on the front foot anymore. This that gave us the early goals. Also, too many players out of form. So do you think they're not getting out of the blocks quick enough?
I don't think Steve Clark teams tend to actually get out of the blocks very quickly. They never really have done. I think, if anything, you could probably describe September at Bristol City and Burnley as a little bit of a blip on that score. They tend to play themselves into games. And that's maybe where we're going wrong. Maybe we need to just get up and at them straight away.
Too many players out of form, Westy?
Definitely. I think there's been some poor performances turned in by 3 or 4 of them at the moment, at least.
Yeah. Derek Walmsley, paying the price for selling Hector. He should have been organising and leading from the back for years to come. Do you think his head's in the right place after that move? Do you think that's got anything to do with it?
I don't think he's professional. I don't think there's anything to do with it. He's still at the club.
Yeah.
He's still at the club. Just a different club playing his wages. He's the same player.
He's still young, still learning, and he will make mistakes.
The only difference is you're less patient with him because he's not our player.
Yeah, that's right.
You give him more patience because if he's our player, it's, he has got here for years to come. But now it's like he's a lone player to the season. Mm. You want a good performance from him this season. Otherwise, what's the point?
I haven't heard his name chanted much this season. Last season, it was almost every week.
He's a Chelsea player. Yes. He's a Chelsea player. In years to come, people will say, he came through the system here, but he's only going to leave here having played 60, 70 games, maybe.
Hmm.
Consider, the fondness that Alex Pearce isn't remembered with. And Alex Pearce played, 300 odd games competitions?
200 to 250, something like that. Yeah.
He barely hear him mentioned.
Barely getting a game in Derby.
Ollie Allen says, are this season's expectations now higher because of the Clark saga? Basically.
I'm not sure how that works, to be honest with you.
Well, in the case of, obviously, now that Clark is... flirted with another club, are you expecting more? He's got to get more. He's got to do better now.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we're expecting more, but he certainly has to achieve at least what we think they were capable of earlier in the season, because if he don't, any little blip now, any sort of disaster, like you said earlier, 2 or 3 defeats on the trot, and they'd be calling for his head.
Yeah. Matt Williams, given that, we'll read that out in the main thing. Ben Print, this one got me as well. Short spotted today. What's the most inappropriate clothing you've seen at Reading? This Ben sent in a picture, and it is the bloke, Dave, that was sat in the road that is alongside you.
Fair play to the guy. He's a regular.
He's
there almost every week, I believe.
Yeah. If you to paint the scene, it is a guy. He's on the large side, which I'm not throwing stones. I'm on the large side as well.
I know what you're talking about.
He wore the African violet away shirt and a pair of sports shorts, short socks, and nothing else. Now, I tweeted before kickoff.
First, I want to know how you knew it was nothing else. What I had under his shorts was not up for question.
I don't know. If you want to verify these reports.
Shorts and shirts and nothing else. I want to know how Wim knows this.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. There you go. Tone's gone.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. It only took about 40 minutes into the show. There's the unprofessional joke of the show going out for you.
Westie's mind really works.
You're right there. But the reason I was thinking this is because I remember...
Stop digging.
...the most appropriate clothing worn at a football match. That was a pants stain, wasn't it? Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Could have been no more inappropriate than a pair of pants over the top of your trousers.
I think the most inappropriate clothing I've seen at a Reading Football Club match would be the streaker at the Notts County game in 1998. It was barely any clothing. It was just a leather jacket.
I don't want to give the old steward the old shoulder as well. Dodged him and he went flying across the grass.
I believe so, yeah.
Probably one of the best incidents ever at Medeca Stadium.
Can either of you two answer this question for me? Because I was asking it having seen this bloke's choice of attire. Obviously, you're more than welcome to wear what you want. But it was so, 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 so cold on Saturday. What do you get out of this?
You get spoke about on a podcast. Rather unpopular podcast, but yes, you get spoke about it nonetheless.
We're popular, we're just an unprofessional joker podcast.
Yeah, but I was saying it, we're talking about him, so he got mentioned.
Maybe I'll ask him next week. Maybe I'll actually ask him why did you not wear more clothes?
Some people just have good luck charms. Some people just do it purely because it's the routine. Like me, for example, we're not talking about my clothing here. We're talking about a routine. Let's get that out of the way. But my routine is generally, or Saturday was slightly different. I started refereeing more for me. But I normally walk down the ground about 11:30, get there for about midday, 12:15. I have a batter, sausage and chips on the way, and I'm happy then.
Yeah.
I'm happy. That's my routine.
Pre-match meal.
But the routine is different from... This was just a practicality case. I just can't get it. It's so cold.
Well, clearly...
It's just good luck. It's my lucky underpants.
Anyway, right, I'm going to move on.
Now, do you remember the guy from Sheffield Wednesday who always just turned up with no top on, wherever
Tango,
he was?
Yeah.
Didn't matter where it was. Has anyone seen him recently? I don't know what's happened to him. Did he freeze to death or something?
I'll have to take a look later in the season.
He should have done. But again, he used to do it, didn't he? He used to do it everywhere, didn't he? Yeah. No matter what the weather.
Please.
He still does. You know, he's been at the Medeski every single time that they've been here. He was certainly there last season.
Mm. Gets talked about.
Yeah. Gets chanted at. And then gives everybody a round of applause at the, you know, when he leaves 10 minutes from the end.
Just put one of those big red in jackets on your Christmas list.
Same as
you'll
Paul
feel
Black.
Better for it.
Paul Black, he's had the same coat for the last 35 years. I've never seen him change it.
Yeah, but exactly. It keeps him warm.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter what the temperature is. If it's boiling, he's still got it on.
Yeah, well.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying.
Answers to at the Tyler's then. If you are said man in African Violet Away shirt, please let us know your motivations. I'm genuinely interested.
Or we could just speak to him at the next time again.
Yeah. Yeah, could do.
Interview
him. Shorts man. No, anyway. Right. Henry, via email. I'm going to read this out, even though this was sent before Clark, because it does raise an interesting point. He says, I'm shocked and saddened. Clark was backed by the owners and fans, has built a very good squad. I just don't understand why he would leave, unless there's something behind the scenes that we don't know about. Nigel Pearson, next in line. Your thoughts? Now, again, it was more the last bit I wanted to bring up, because if things do take a ridiculous turn for the worse, out of all the names mentioned, and there were a fair few, the likes of Timmy Sherwood, said Nigel Pearson.
Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank.
Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. A few names banded about, but who would you have liked to have seen if Clark had walked out?
Nigel Pearson.
Yeah, I'd have had Pearson as well.
I would have had him. I would have had him like a shot. I think he's a very good Championship football manager. He's kept Leicester up last season. I think he lost his job in slightly dubious circumstances surrounding his son. But do you know what? He's done it at this level.
Yep.
You know, and he's taken Leicester City twice. To I think it's above 100 point seasons at League One and Championship level now. They got over 100 points last season, didn't they?
I'm not sure. I couldn't remember.
But
they went up anyway, but yeah.
And comfortably.
Yeah.
They lost four games all season.
He comes across to me as got an old school hard sort of manager as well, I think would do us a well.
I'm not a fan of the way he deals with the media, and just generally just seems a bit of a nasty man.
But I couldn't give a damn how he deals with the media. It's how he deals with his team. His teams play good football, I think. They play good, exciting football, fast-paced football. And if Steve Clark leaves and he's still out of a job, I'd be barreling down the doors.
What about the name of a man whose name was sung in this second half?
No.
More to do with the Christmas routine than anything else, but Phil Parkinson.
No.
Head shakes.
Love him. Absolutely love the guy. 10, 12, however many years it was at Reading, but he's not a Championship manager. He'd get found out.
Or we would.
Indeed. Well, I will...
Sorry to interrupt. There are plenty of names, as you said. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank is one. You take a look at current Gillingham manager, former Spurs player. Justin Edinburgh. You can take a look at him.
Yeah, he's done
maybe.
Well.
I like Paul Tisdale. I'd like to see what he could do.
Yeah,
he's done a lot with no money.
We've apparently been in for him before, he hasn't wanted to leave. He hasn't decided it's the right time.
Did he succeed Dolan? Exeter.
He did. Yes.
Yeah.
He succeeded Eamon Dolan. I'll tell you when we went in for him was after Steve Coppell left. He decided it wasn't the right time at that point. 2009, I think. Exeter had. They'd just been promoted to League One. And so he had unfinished business. And he's starting to rebuild things there a little bit at the moment as well.
Yeah, they've not got a lot of money. They're in
not
best financial shape.
Done an excellent job.
Yeah.
Really has.
Right, that just about answers that one. And finally then, from Ian Wilson, our resident Leicester fan, a man who knows Nigel Pearson only too well. Congratulations on being top of the Premier League, Ian. I'm not jealous at all. He said, bad luck on the awards, which we'll get to very shortly. But congratulations on the nomination. Some people dine out on nominations alone for years. But I do seem to remember him being nominated for a Student Radio Award back in 2006 or 7.
I think Johnny Fordham used to dine out on a few nominations as well. So he's
didn't you get?
Right,
didn't you get him a nomination? Yeah. Didn't you go and get? Didn't you go and offend some Olympic gold medalist?
Yeah, that was at Journalist of the Year.
Yeah,
that was good. That was
there's
good.
A story there. Come on.
Yeah, no, I can't remember off the top of my head, but we upset her because Johnny bit her gold medal to see if it was gold.
The Sun's Johnny Fordham.
Yeah, the Sun's Johnny Fordham.
Noticed he made the back page of the Sun the other day, so I tweeted him saying, oh, you know, congratulations, but you still missed the podcast. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm still waiting for my invite to come back on. Wesley said I'd come back on any time.
Yeah,
not mentioned anything to me. Yeah, anytime you're in the area, which is never.
Never, no.
We will get him on.
So, yeah, so she got the right hump because he bit into her gold medal and asked us to leave. At Journalist of the Year Awards.
Excellent.
Which he didn't win.
Anyway.
Nice one, Johnny.
And the second part of Ian's question is, do you have a second team or is the concept an affront to your loyalty to the Royals? I quite like Arsenal.
I don't have second team, but I do have teams whose results I look out for who I quite like. They're mainly based around personal friendships. Funnily enough, we're going a little bit full circle here. One of those clubs that I look out for is Exeter City. Some people are going to slap me in the street when I say this, but I also look out for Millwall's results. I quite like Millwall. Quite like travelling there.
I've got but I thought no one likes them and they didn't care.
Well, I see, you know, they're complete antithesis to everything Reading are, isn't it? I just look at them as like sort of pink fluffy teddy bears, really. yeah, Millwall, I quite like Millwall. I quite look out for their results. Personal friendships. Obviously, I'm quite friendly with my manager at work. He's a Chelsea fan. I look out for their results, but I can't stand them. I've now started taking a look at Mansfield's results because of a colleague at work. You know, so that's basically see the theme here. Personal friendships, I look out, and I quite enjoy the fact that, you know, when other teams who my friends support do well, they're happy, I'm happy, they buy me more beer.
Westy, are you a one team man, or have you got a little bit on the side?
No, I'm a one team man, but the only team I will look out for is Tottenham, just because when I was a kid, I used to love some of their players, Chris Waddle, Lineker, Gazza. So, yeah, probably Tottenham, in fact, to pick one.
Yeah, in my formative years, I was a Playground United fan. I was always Reading, but I had to pick a Premier League team as well because you had to have one.
No one knew Reading well back
then. Yeah, you had to have one on the playground. And I remember getting that awful United grey strip because it was a tenner.
The one they couldn't see.
Yeah, at, like JJB. It was a tenner. So I was like, oh, great.
That's at Southampton. Remember, they got hammered. Yeah, they said we couldn't see the kids.
Villa as well, wasn't it? They were 3-0 down at half time.
And I was a goalkeeper, so I had some great goalkeeper kits. And Schmeichel, obviously,
of course,
being a good keeper, so I had a bit of them. And then it's generally teams I've managed to success in Football Manager. So teams like Ross County,
Aberdeen.
Yeah,
there was a question. I don't know if you see this on Match of the Day 2 yesterday, and it was obviously they had Schmeichel in there, the young Schmeichel. And they said there's 10 other sons that followed their dads into the Premier League. I didn't see the answers, but it's something to think of. I don't know anything off the top of my head even, but...
Tom Ince?
Yeah, Tom Ince, there you go.
Yeah, well, this is one for another week.
Yeah, just have a think about it.
Pub chat for another week. I have a soft spot for other teams. I don't think you can really... I think if you support more than one team, it dilutes it for yourself, because, you know, what do you really get out of it? It's like if you're betting at the casino and you've got chips on like 15, 20 different numbers.
Yeah,
you're probably going to win, but you're not going to win as much, are you? No. So, anyway.
I think it's...
Back a horse and stick to it. Anyway, that gamble wraps
away.
Up... Yeah, gamble away. That wraps up a long mailbag this week. I said thank you very much to all of you who've got in touch via the usual channels. We'll just wrap up the show by looking ahead to Saturday's game with Nottingham Forest.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business?
Right, any other business time. And as I just mentioned, we will look ahead to that game at Nottingham Forest on Saturday. But just before that, I just wanted to quickly say again a big thank you to everyone who voted for us at the Football Blogging Awards. We went up on Thursday, as you heard, if you did tune into that brief podcast. Unfortunately, we didn't come back with the with the silverware. But would you expect anything more from such an unprofessional joke of a podcast?
Nice website? To be nominated, isn't it?
It was. And we missed out to two very good websites, one called The Football Pink and the other is The Golden Times. Check them out. Both fantastic websites. And it was really nice to be nominated. There were some fantastic blogs and websites and individuals there we got to chat to. So congratulations to all of those who won and everyone who got nominated, and to the organisers as well. It was a good night.
Free booze?
There was some Carlsberg available, yeah.
Carlsberg Export, apparently.
Wow.
Which nobody liked apart from
Johnny, yeah. Johnny. They put like a bucket down our table, and we had Becca, who was working the next day. We had myself. We had young Ollie, who's underage and can't drink. Oh. And Sim, Bucks Royal. He's not a massive drinker, so me and Sim weren't drinking that much. So Johnny basically had this bucket of booze to himself.
Yeah.
And you wonder why he's not been on the show.
Yeah, hence why he's not here this week.
Yeah, he's still there. But no, thank you very much to everyone who got us there. It's very much appreciated. As I said, we do this all for free. We don't get paid. Everyone's a volunteer. And it's just little nods like that that give you the incentive to just keep going and try and push on. So big thank you to everyone. I will have a piece up in the morning just with a few details, including a great little video of John Barnes performing Rapper's Delight.
Oh, yes.
It was one of the more surreal things I've seen.
That is worth the entrance fee alone.
Indeed, yeah. Big Stan Collymore was there as well. Mm. He was named the best football influencer.
Mm. I'll be a bit worried about him in the pub. He's got form.
Anyway, let's move on from that. Big Stan is the type of person that would take on bridge with such things. Moving on to Saturday's game with Nottingham Forest. Another team that aren't doing particularly well. They're 18th in the Championship. Played 17, won 4, drawn 5, lost 8. Their recent form is woeful at best. They've won 1 in 10, that coming against local rivals Derby on the telly. Goals are a bit of a problem. They've only scored more than once twice in those 17 games. So chances are, if you score 2 goals, you've got a damn good chance of winning.
Mm.
The County Ground, a ground that we've got some good memories of as well.
City Ground.
City Ground, sorry, not the County Ground. That'll really upset them.
Yeah.
At the City Ground, remember that 4-3 in the playoff final season?
I do, yeah. Good day that was.
Simon Church.
Compo backed the national winner that day as well. So yeah. That was champagne train on the way back. It's been literally champagne train.
Yeah, but a few goals against Forest.
Yeah, we won there last... Did we win there last season?
2 seasons ago.
Three, two seasons ago.
Oh, yeah, so Simon Cox scored in that game.
How did we go last season?
We lost
4-0.
Yeah. Aha, that's why. Completely blacked out. Yeah, Mikel Antonio took us apart, didn't he?
He did.
When they looked like they were going to win the league under Stuart Pearce, I distinctly remember coming on this show, said, well, can't complain, Nottingham Forest are going to win the league.
Didn't happen.
Yeah, that's why I'm not rich. But anyway, let's look at the team now and their form. How do you expect Reading to get on in this one, Dave?
Do you know what the way things are going, the way we played this week, and the way things have just sort of started to settle down after the whole Steve Clark thing? There's a result there for us, I think. Having said that, it would be all too obvious for Reading to go up there and sort of lose 2-0.
Yeah.
Based on everything that's just been said. Yeah, do you know what? If you can get at them, the fact that they've lost Antonio, who was such a massive part of them over the last, was it 2 seasons he was there, was it?
Yeah. Destroyed us, actually, on the last 2 occasions we played him.
Oh, sorry, it was at Sheffield Wednesday 13-14, wasn't he? He was only at Forest for a season. But yeah, I mean, the fact that every other week, you know, or every week, you looked at Forest result and you either saw Antonio assist or Antonio goal.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't got Britt Asamoah longer. He's obviously still injured. He's out for another, 4 or 5 months. They're eminently beatable.
They do have one Matt Mills, though.
7-1. do you know what? We owe them one. We owe them one for the 3-0 that they got against us last season when it was never a 3-0 game. We should have got something out of that game. They scored 2 absolute worldies and walked away with 3, ultimately, in the end, what looked like 3 very comfortable points, and it wasn't.
Yeah, Westy, you can see why they struggle to score goals with some of the names they've got. Still peddling out the likes of Dexter Blackstock. Lansbury's got a goal returning from midfield. David Vaughan. It's just...
Yeah, it's nothing to set the world alight, is
no,
it?
No, it's not something that's going to have Paul McShane awake at night, is it?
No, but when teams are on a bad run of form, Reading teams have seemed to be a good side to play, don't they? So that's the only concern I've got there. And we're not exactly pulling up any trees ourselves, are we?
What about the team? Any changes you'd make based on what you saw Saturday?
Yeah, take Piers on out.
Yeah, take Piers on out.
I think. Do you know what? With Piers on, he played. He was in the front three, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Was it the front three?
Well, it was more of a 4-4-2, really, sort of. Until the second half, anyway.
Yeah, do you know, I'd just take Piers on out, and if you're going to have him as a midfielder, then you've got to have him all around in midfielder. I'd have Alex Fernandez in there. If you're going to have him as a more forward player, then I would be inclined to place. Ola John in there, quite simple. And I just, do you know what? As one of the 6 loanees, I ditch Piers on completely.
Vidra comes straight back in for you, Westy.
I think he probably will. And again, he might end up putting Blackman on the wing and Pearson be outside anyway. So
will he though? Because he's played Blackman on the right. It's McCleary that's usually been sacrificed.
Yeah, maybe. Again, McCleary is probably best game he had all season, but he hasn't. Again, he's another one that's not set the world alight, has he?
I'm surprised they'd not at least try Gareth McCleary on the left. I can't really remember him ever doing a job there for Reading.
Well, he cuts in on the right all the time, so yeah. Being on the left probably suit him.
Yeah, I mean, Joby McAduff made the switch fairly successfully late in his career. Yeah.
Then he switched to midfield and he sort of switched to another club.
Lorient.
Yeah.
Is he still there?
I think so, but I don't think he's getting played because of financial considerations or something.
Yeah, I said this, funny enough, it leads into what I was talking about this week. When was the time come when players used to be centre-forwards and then go and play centre-back for about 2 years? It doesn't happen anymore, does it? I thought when Heskey came on, I thought he'd probably do a job at centre-back. He don't do a lot up front. So.
You had a couple in recent years, didn't you? Yeah. Was it Gary Docherty who played?
Deion Dublin, he slipped back centre-back, didn't he?
Chris Sutton.
Yeah. There's been a few, but it doesn't happen anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't.
I wonder why.
I wonder why. Well, yeah, answers to at the Tarlest end.
There you go.
Okay, then. Business time. Prediction League. Now, there is one man who got this score right. He is sat at the table opposite from me, and it's not Mr. Alan West.
No.
Dave, congratulations. Your first three-pointer in the Prediction League.
I still think it's my second. I got Bristol City absolutely spot on.
Your first three-pointer.
Yeah, famously first.
Even down to the comfortable 2-0.
Your first three-pointer in the Prediction League. That moves up to 4 points level with one Mr. Alan West.
Started 6 weeks behind me, so well done.
You two prop up the bottom of the table on 4 points. Wesley, you did predict a Reading win. You said 1-0.
Finally got
one. All of us predicted a Reading win, and for once, it didn't seem to jinx us. I said 3-0. Johnny said 3-1. Charles saying 2-0. So we all got a point. So that basically means that Charles is still top on 14, I'm second on 13, and Johnny is in third on 11. So, given that you didn't get it right, I'll give you the first go.
Do you know what? You know what I said last time? I'm going to start predicting negative results against Reading. I'm going to predict the negative result.
Okay.
In the hope that it gives Reading a win. So I'm going to say Forest 2-1.
2-1. Dave?
The fact that Forest can't buy a win at home at the moment. They can't really score. Hopefully Clark sees that we need tightening up at the back. I think we'll concede. I think we will concede the obligatory goal. But I think we've got just enough in the tank. And we will go to the City Ground and walk away with 3 points with a 2-1 win.
Okay, 1-2. I'm going to say draw on this one. I think this has got 1-1 written all over it. And I will get the
jackpot draw.
Indeed. I will get the thoughts of Johnny Williams and Charles Watts a little later in the week. I just, again, an apology. There was no podcast section this week. I feel like a liar now. I keep promising these shows, not delivering. As you can appreciate, with Clark's news conference being moved to Friday, with a young daughter to take care of, there just wasn't a chance. I was travelling back from Manchester as well, so I was away all morning. There just wasn't a chance myself and Charles to get together to record the show. Optimistically, I'd like to say we'll be recording on Friday, but I'm not going to promise it, given recent events. Fingers crossed we should be recording, so but just keep an eye out on the feed. Hopefully the show pops up. But yeah, apologies from, I said, both me and Charles, both just unfortunately scheduling. I said, and if someone wants to donate me about 40 grand a year to run this full time,
that's not going to happen. So yeah, they have to make do, won't they?
Well, there might be some rich benefactor out there who just really, really likes the Tarlest End.
Maybe.
If you are this person, please make yourself known. Christmas is coming up.
You're prepared to move to
my Bullock. Kittens need presents, yeah. My kittens need food. Nah, they're right. Right, anyway, that wraps up the show. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Nothing else to be said, really, apart from that. Come on, you arse. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. It's funny how they always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You know where the teams are in your town. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.